Go for it.
Thank you, Zoe. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Rules to order. It's Wednesday, February 26, 2014. And, committee, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1515.
And members of the committee, Senate Bill 1515 establishes a work group to examine feasibility of internet voting, specifies issues to be investigated, requires work group to report findings to Legislative Assembly before December 1st, 2014. There is an emergency clause on the measure. The measure comes with no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact and comes from the Senate chamber with 18 aye and 11 no votes and one excused.
Thank you. Senator Starr. Welcome to the House Rules Committee, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Great. Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Senator Bruce Starr. I have the privilege of representing Senate District 15 in Western Washington County. I'm the chief sponsor of Senate Bill 1515, a bill that has generated significant interest and quite honestly some concern around the state. Colleagues, friends, this is, for me, an exercise that began when I was traveling this last summer. I had the opportunity to travel to the country of Estonia, where I learned a lot about that particular country. And one of the things that I learned is that they do virtually everything that government does that interacts with the citizen, they do online. So if you go to get a building permit, it's all done online. Basically, virtually any interaction between the citizens and the government is done online, including voting. And while I was there, it's like, wow, that's interesting. They clearly have a system that works at least for their citizens, mm-hmm. and that is the crux, the nutshell, the beginning of what brought us to this bill, Senate Bill 1515, asking the Secretary of State basically to look at the issues, all of the issues that would encompass the idea of voting via the internet or electronic voting. It's not more complicated than that. I think as we had debate on the Senate floor and in the Senate committee, there's a lot of concern about this. And legitimately so. I think the timing of this particular bill is interesting in that it came about the same time that the Secretary of State's website got hacked. So what I would suggest perhaps is that for the time being, that we let this idea of studying internet voting rest. It's clearly up to the purview of this committee what you would choose to do with Senate Bill 1515. But based on kind of what's happened in Oregon and around the country, and the concern that's been raised here, I'm appreciative of the Senate debate and the work that my Senate colleagues did on this bill. But I'm not asking you to move this bill forward this morning. I think it's an opportunity for us to think about these things, but as it relates to having a formal process that moves forward with the review of internet voting, I'm happy to let the issue rest, and we can do other things as it relates to having the Secretary of State spend her time and their staff time. Mr. Vice Chair, members, I'd be happy to answer questions, but yes, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. I appreciate the testimony. Representative Barnhart, a question?
Thank you. Is there anything that prevents the Secretary of State from organizing a work group and doing exactly what this bill calls for on her own?
Mr. Vice Chair and Representative Barnhart, I don't believe that there is.
Well, this would simply tell her to do it.
Exactly. I believe there's a representative from the Secretary of State's office in the audience, and they certainly could address that question, but I don't believe that the Secretary of State needs the legislature to tell her to look at this particular issue. That's just what this bill contemplated.
And if I could just follow up, I believe we heard that there isn't a fiscal on this bill, and that would suggest to me that this is a task that the Secretary of State believes she can complete with existing resources and maybe even would like to do that. Now, maybe she's changed her views since the recent events, but...
So, Mr. Vice Chair, Representative, as I had conversations with the Secretary of State and staff, I don't know that they took a position. I don't believe they took a position either way. They did clearly communicate that they could undertake this work without adding additional staff. At this point, I think there's other challenges that they're working on in the Secretary of State's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger?
Yes, thank you, Senator. Thank you for bringing this discussion. It's a discussion I think we need to have, and I appreciate your sensitivity to where we are. When you were in Europe, there's a real question here. One of the issues that I think has come forward as a result of recent basically security breaches, specifically Target, it seemed clear that our security around, say, credit cards isn't as good as it is in Europe. And I think that weighs in here that... I don't know what they're doing in Estonia to ensure security under this system, but I think that's the real issue. And what was your sense of that? Did you have a discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know exactly. I wasn't able to dig into it that deeply while we were there. In about an hour and a half or two-hour presentation we had, it was the very big picture look at these issues. Which actually brought me to this bill. So clearly, Estonia is not the only state. There's another one, and I'm not remembering exactly what it is. But other places around the world are accomplishing this in a way that apparently their citizens understand and support. And so it's like, why don't we at least look at it? And, you know, I wasn't afraid to ask the question, but as we look at kind of the circumstances that we're in the middle of here in the state of Oregon right now, it's probably not the right time.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the discussion.
Yep.
Representative Parker, did you have a question?
More of a comment, but thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing it forward. And I'm certainly not going to try to push something forward over the chief sponsor's suggestion that we not. But I would think that there's an opportunity in the considerations and deliberations that the Secretary of State is going through to lay the groundwork for accommodating something like this. There are acute and more chronic changes that need to be made in the infrastructure surrounding the ORSTAR site. And I won't attempt to go into further detail or as to the breadth of that. But I would hope that the Secretary of State would consider that we may be going down that path and to take any steps in the architecture of what they're going to be working on that might facilitate us doing this at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thank you for bringing the bill forward. I know the IT world is always in flux, and whether we can actually protect sites from being hacked 100% for sure, I don't think anybody's accomplished that yet. But anyway, appreciate you bringing this forward. With that, I close work session on Senate Bill 1515 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1544.
And members of the committee, Senate Bill 1544 changes membership and meeting requirements of Citizen Initiative Review Commission, directs commission to establish compensation for electors by rule. It eliminates the sunset date for commission. There is an emergency clause on the measure. This measure comes to you with no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, and comes to you with 27 aye votes from the Senate.
And Senator Roblin and Representative Berger, would you like to go down or stay there?
Sit with the senator.
Somebody should, I think.
That's right. It's always helpful.
Isn't there some memory of him or something?
We won't talk about those
fond
memories.
Fond memories. Fond memories. Thank you.
So, anyway, welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record,
thank you very much. I will do that. I am Senator Arne Roblin from Senate District 5, previously from House District 9, and had the opportunity to sit up there and work in the Rules Committee with one of the Rules members sitting next to me who was on the Rules when I was here, and another couple on the still here, which is enjoyable to see. And I am very, very pleased that the Rules Committee has taken this up. This has become one of my passions in the legislature since we heard testimony in the Rules Committee after they had done the pilot projects, and they were wanting to make sure that they got a place for their review in the voters' pamphlet. And that conversation that started here, actually one of the members of that first panel is sitting in the board, sitting behind us, and she was also one of the people who testified about how important this process was, and was one of those people, and I told her in the hall, that helped me, and I think Representative Berger, she can speak to that, her testimony about, you know, being here and being on that commission and how it affected her, affected me, because it was a real conversation about how we get real Oregonians through a process of that's random to sit down and make a decision and have the opportunity to hear from people in favor and people opposed to a particular issue. And then at the end of the day, that jury takes a vote, and there's a minority and a majority report that goes into the voters' pamphlet. And we eventually institutionalized that in the voters' pamphlet. Last session, we put a bill together that put a sunset clause on this whole organization because we wanted to find them a place to be. They were with a very interesting group to help them manage the finances. None of the money that they use comes from us. It's all received from private donations that to make the thing. So it isn't state money. But we had to have a place to interface with the state. And they went with this medical records group. It made no sense. And that came to be fairly clear. So we had this bill that says, go forth and find a place to be, and then come back. And so in the intervening time, they have worked out with Portland State University that they can be the host agency. And then they have also worked out with the original group that started them to do the fundraising for them. So they have a process now to make it work for the future. And I would say that if you look at the research that's been done, and they've worked actively to engage to get research, and they have people in place to do some research again. They have shown to the Oregon public that this is a valuable asset, that when they take on an issue and they bring their jurists together, Oregonians read their information that's in the ballot title at a much higher, and they believe it much more than just about anything else. And when you listen to the jurists that actually got to say, they said, for the first time, I really understand the issue because I got to ask the questions I've always wanted to ask from the people who are there to answer it, as opposed to listening to the 30-second sound bites that go through all these initiative processes. So for me, it's something that is truly an Oregon product. We had a group of people who brought it together after their work at the University of Oregon. They have worked it. They continue to be a part of it, and it is something that, from my perspective, we have an obligation to Oregon voters to see to its rightful conclusion, and I think this is the way the bill. It also had always envisioned finding a better way to get people who would serve on their board, and they originally started out with what I thought was a unique solution. They went out and found the strongest Democrats and the strongest Republicans and put them in equal numbers on the board so that there was a watchguard group that made sure that it was being done fairly. And now they're saying, after we've had enough people that have gone through the process, we think that that should be the pot. The group of people who have been jurists, who really understand the process, should be a bigger part of the board. And that's what the change in the who is on the board portion about it is all about. Again, no state money being spent. They raise all of it. They decide when they figure out how much money that they have, how many different ballot measures they can take on. They've already raised $120,000 of the $180,000 they think they need. So I commend to you this bill. I think it's a great opportunity for our state. We had a great vote in the Senate, and I anticipate people here in the House would like it as well. And with that, I'll let my esteemed colleague, who has continued to be on rules, which is really pretty exciting.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Vicki Berger. Senator Roblin and I have been on this journey together over this bill. I believe that 20 years from now, when you walk down the halls and you look at the new Galleria displays of what is uniquely Oregon and where Oregon has been a leader and an innovator, which is what is out there now, this process will be up there. We all are extremely sensitive to the fact that the way citizens get information has changed dramatically in the last 20 years and continues to evolve as we see our newspapers change and all of the media, the print media, the the broadcast media, it's all in a state of change. And so when citizens go to look for information, they almost have too many options to judge their value, and this is an issue. And stepping into that in Oregon's initiative process is this sort of unique opportunity to have citizens look at the issues on their own and jury the issues for themselves, ordinary citizens who represent ordinary Oregonians, and then that goes into our voters' pamphlet as their review. That's the only place this program interfaces with government. It is not government-funded. I have been adamant that if the minute we put state dollars into this, we have lost the independent nature of this review. It becomes guided or seen as not independent. So this has been an issue all along, and we have come to a really good place in terms of finding funding for this. And this bill takes it another step, as he said, with letting the jurors, the people who have been through this process and understand it, be the guiders of how it progresses. And that, too, is incredibly valuable. So it's not as understood in this body, because when we spent endless hearings on this in this committee, and he and I have understood it, but as institutional knowledge kind of begins to change, we're back here telling you we believe in it. We hope you will continue to believe in it, and we hope that you will keep this Oregon innovation moving forward. Because someday it's going to be part of our legacy as a legislature that we did something really unique in Oregon to help our citizens understand really complicated issues. So I thank you for your attention, and I hope you'll look favorably upon this bill.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really like this process very much, the proposals here make a lot of sense. I'm wondering what we're going to need to do to broaden the scope of the commission so that it can actually take on more of the ballot measures as they come up. We seem to have a lot of them, and my suspicion is that there will be more controversial ones on this ballot in November than they will have room for to evaluate. Any thoughts about that issue?
You know, they do try very hard to analyze the ballot measures and pick those that are controversial that people really want to know about. That's been part of the process. It really comes down to fundraising. And in this particular ballot title time, it may be that there will be more money. We'll have to wait and see. They decide that based on what they can do. And in this bill, you also see that they're actually saying that we're going to take the average wage and make sure that we pay our jurists. Because one of the things I think they found out early, if you're going to do a random sample of people, and then you pick somebody from Burns or Gold Beach, you've got to do something to make that so that it doesn't, that they can say yes. And so it's important for them to have that cross-section of people. And that means giving them a little wage. I wish it was a little bit higher. The average wage in Oregon is not where it should be. But we can work on that, maybe get that up. And they also want to make sure that they have a place to stay and all those kind of things and travel to and from. So they've done the right things to instill that we're going to get this cross-section. The big issue will be how do we continue to encourage their fundraising? Because I agree, once we put money into it, it gets harder for everybody to think that it's not necessarily biased. So I think that's been a great process. But as these ballot measures come up, encourage people who you may know to decide to give some money to the organization so that they can actually do a few more of them.
Madam Chair, if you have time, it may be helpful to have the folks come and take these folks through briefly what the process for a jurist is and how much their commitment is, if they're interested. If you have time and are interested. It may not be, or you may want to take it up later. But I think people don't understand. They have to commit to really studying the issue the way we study the issue in an intense process. They come together the way we do to look at these. And there's only so much time, and there's only so many they can cover under the funding that they have.
Representative Kenema.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I have a follow-up later.
I want to thank you for bringing this forward and originally bringing it forward. You know, one of the incredible
parts of our Oregon tradition is this initiative. And it's been interesting in my lifetime. It seems that we've gotten more with the changes in media to soundbite initiatives. And it's sort of a, if we're not careful, it's a battle about who has the most money rather than who has the best idea.
Right.
And I like this. It helps even the playing field and gives us more credible material to work with. And I think it's working remarkably well. And I like the fact that, you know, citizens have an enormous access to their government, very direct access. That's what the initiative is. I think we're the leader in the nation for initiatives. So, and I'd like to see that tradition continue, but a little more thoughtfully. And I think this goes a long ways in achieving that. Thank you.
And we were the first state for the initiative process.
Yeah. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, we're going through a period of incredible growth and change in information and in the information delivery systems. I'm struck in relationship to elections that the sometimes very powerful influence of the social media. And I'm wondering, as you were writing and thinking about preparing this, if you gave any thought to that particular format, the impact that it is having and how that impact may grow before it starts to plateau, and how, if at all, the issue before us interfaces with the social media.
Madam Chair, if I could respond, not with an answer, but with a thank you for bringing this up, because I think we're all, the points you made are ones we all grapple with. When we started with the initiative review, I'd never really looked at Facebook before and didn't realize its power. And now, of course, I check my Facebook page every day. I found like, holy smokes, how did I come to this? So your question is a valid one, but the thing that I have discovered about that kind of media is it's very individualized. Unlike the broadcast or the print or a lot of other media, it is a choice media. You can post or not post or talk about on an incredible individual level. And I think in terms of this process, individuals can link to this information, talk about this information on social media. There's no barriers to that. The only face, but in terms of the process of vetting it, that has to remain something that is dependable and not just bringing in random information or posts. But it, in the jury process, that has to remain information that is useful and valid. And then if people want to individually take that information and put it into individual media, whatever, however they do, I think that's certainly legitimate. But at the end of the day, what goes under the Citizen Review Initiative on the voter's pamphlet has to have a certain sense of its validity. And that's what I think is most important for us to protect. Representative, if I knew the way the media is going, man, I'd probably be as, well, I'd have a different life. But it certainly is part of the issue, and when we it's in all of our heads as its power begins to just snowball through our culture.
I would say that we want to continue to make sure that this process is one that is trusted and believed in. And the surveys that we've been taking have clearly stated that's the case. We want to make sure that the information that goes in that voter's pamphlet came from those jurists because of the information they got in that jury. I think that's, people need to know that, because what we've found is when we evaluate, when people who know about it and know the statement that's in the voter pamphlet, they believe it and accept it better than the stuff that was written about the ballot by the state or anybody else. They trust it better. We want to make sure that happens first, and then I agree. Maybe in getting the information out at some point in the future, we'll want to make sure the voter's pamphlet goes online, other kinds of things that we can do some stuff. But we need to make sure that the process is protected and made sure that people understand this is what it is. And I think that's what this bill does. But we've got to figure out how to get a hold of more people. I mean, the first review that came out said it was really influential on the people who read it. And how few there were was pretty remarkable. They've increased the number of people who read that and see that as important information. And we continue to do that. But that happens because people trust it. And once you see it plastered around in different ways, I think you'll lose that. So that's why right now I think it's what we need to do.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And what I'm going to do is I will call up, if we would like to have some people talk about their experiences with this. But first, I'm going to call up Representative Matthews so he can speak to his bill.
Absolutely.
So that's fine. I will close the work session on.
No, don't close it.
What am I going to do? You can reopen the work session.
Okay.
Go ahead and close it, and we'll reopen it in a moment. Right. Yes. So I was right.
I
just wanted to put that on the record. I was totally right. Every once in a while it happens. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1544 and open a work session on HCR 204. Representative Matthews.
And members of the committee, HCR 204 honors William Bill Johnson for being first American male to win gold medal at Olympic Games and Alpine event.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative, House District 50, the great city of Gresham. Here today to tell you a little story about Bill Johnson, and I really appreciate the chair and the committee hearing this HCR. I only wish this was one of those great true stories of Cinderella types where the ending is as grand as the beginning, but that's not the case with Bill Johnson. In Bill's own words, he's not an athlete, he just skis fast. And those were his own words. Obviously, he couldn't mutter those words to me today, because Bill currently resides in Gresham in a rehabilitation facility, and he will be there, I'm sure, for the remainder of his life. Bill wasn't even expected to live this long. He's defied the odds several times over. I bring this forward to you today because timing is everything. And watching the Olympics this past couple weeks, which I love the Olympics, big fan of the USA, wish hockey could have pulled something out, but that's unfortunate. But the reality is I was watching it, and it just came to my mind that, you know, we have an Olympian. In fact, as a firefighter, I've served this Olympian. I've responded on him multiple times. We go to this facility quite a bit. Guys in my crew, Mike Galvin, Kevin Ferguson, they make a habit of stopping by Bill's place to say, "Hey, Billy, how you doing?" And he always acknowledges you as he can. But this situation, and the reason we brought the HCR forward, is we couldn't find evidence that he'd been recognized by this body. He was the first American alpine skier to ever win in the Olympics, to bring home the gold, to do what he did. And that was in 1984. Just briefly, his life was quite a struggle. As I said, it's not your typical story. In fact, if you were a Hollywood movie writer, you wouldn't want to write this story because it doesn't have a dramatic flair for an ending. It's really unfortunate. Bill started as kind of a high school hooligan, Sandy High School. He's one of those kids that just couldn't stay in line. He wrapped up with the wrong crowd. He was stealing cars. He was doing things. And if not for one judge that said, "Look, you either go to the ski camp or you're going to jail," who knows where Bill would have gone. He would have gone to jail. But he went to ski camp instead and realized the talents that he had and just the raw talent for speed. This kid was fast. And so he got into the World Cup competition just a few years later. And he won the World Cup prior to going to Sarajevo on the Olympics. Now, keep in mind, this was a sport dominated by the Europeans. This is a sport that, you know, he wasn't supposed to win. And yet, here comes this kid nobody'd heard of within the first year, and he gets the World Cup championship. Then he goes to the Olympics. Couldn't keep his mouth shut. Again, not your typical athlete. He goes down, talks smack to everybody in the crowd, everybody there, and says, "You guys are racing for second and third. I don't know what the big deal is. I'm going to win this thing." And he did. He predicted his own victory, and that's what he did. It's unfortunate the legend doesn't continue. He would win two more races beyond that in World Cup competition. And then tragedy kind of struck. He just kind of became, you know, plagued with injuries. After trying to rehabilitate through the injuries, he had two small children. One of them drowned at his house, lost his child, lost his wife. She left him, then he was divorced with no children. Hits the 40-year-old mark and decides, you know, I should try a comeback. Goes to Montana to ski in that event, and that's where you can see what they call the worst ski crash ever if you were to YouTube the race. You would see Bill Johnson flying down the mountain at speeds over 80 to 90 miles an hour and losing total control, flailing himself into the air through the gated fence and into a pole. Traumatic brain injuries, learning to walk, learning to talk, all that would occur, and Bill would again get back on the slopes. But the problem is he could never race again. And when you look at the folks that were such big names back then with him, Phil and Steve Mayer, the Mayer brothers, Franz Klammer, all these guys, they don't like Bill. But they're coming to his aid now, and they're trying to raise money for his cause because his mother, D.B. Cooper, who used to sell flags, in fact, after September 11th, we bought several flags from the fire department from his mother. They can't make it meet. Medicare, Medicaid can help, but it doesn't cover all of his expenses. Bill is now, unfortunately, suffers a series of strokes, seizures on occasion. He's not able to communicate. I would hope that we can get him here. If you were given an opportunity to see his gold medal, you would be amazed and shocked at what that thing looks like and feels like and what it is. The reason it's so tattered, it's not your typical, wow, that's a beautiful medal. It actually looks like something you might see at a secondhand store and maybe pay $5 for. It's not that dramatic. The reason why is because Bill won it, and he decided he was going to carry it in his car. He took that thing with him and let everybody wear it, and everybody try it on it, everybody take a picture, and it was just kind of cool. But that was Bill Johnson. Like I said, he didn't say I'm a great athlete. He said, I just ski fast. It discounts all of that. His family didn't ask for this. His mother didn't ask for this. I brought this forward to the good chair because I thought, this state really should recognize our citizens. And in this fashion, this is a citizen that accomplished a great feat. Olympic gold. Now, keep in mind, the very first USA athlete to win the Olympic gold for this country. He resides right here in Oregon, where he spent the majority of his life, and he's right here in my backyard in Gresham. So that's what we're doing forward. Now, John Canzano from The Bald-Faced Truth, which is 7:50 a.m. On the game, a little plug for John, they did a fundraiser last week during the Olympics to let everybody know that here's what Bill's condition is and here's where he's at. If you were to Google Bill Johnson, or if you were to get on YouTube and look, you can see his Olympic race. You can see his victory, and you'd see the thrill of the victory and the agony of his defeat. You can find a video also. It's about 15 seconds long of Bill now manipulating an electronic wheelchair just to get up and down the hall to his room. It is tragic. But we still have an opportunity here to recognize what he's done and the feat that occurred in winning the gold. I know there's a lot of Oregonians out there worthy of our praise, and hopefully legislators continue to bring those forward while these folks are still alive to see our appreciation. This one, I believe, is long overdue, and that's why I bring it forward. And thanks for hearing HCR 204.
Thank you so much for bringing it forward. Anyone on the committee? Question? Comment? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 204 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Hovey moves HCR to the floor, HCR 204 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes. Representative Matthews, you'll be the carrier. If that pleases you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Give it to him anyway.
Okay. First, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1504. We'll go back to 1544 after this. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1504. Erin, could you review the measure?
And Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1504 expands list of prior violations that prohibit individual from becoming paid circulator and signature gatherer. It amends time period paid circulator's criminal records check is valid, permits name of candidate nominated from more than one district office to appear on ballot more than once, permits elector who submitted ballot in unsigned return identification envelope to remain on active voter rolls. It resolves discrepancy regarding regarding day on which challenge ballot records may be released to public. It resolves certification date discrepancy for write-in ballots. It limits prohibition on electioneering to business hours. It permits person to show person's own marked ballot to another person. There is no revenue impact. There is no fiscal impact on the measure. It comes to you from the Senate with a 20 aye votes and 9 no votes.
Gina Zedlick from Secretary of State's office.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Gina Zedlick. I am Chief of Staff for Secretary of State Kate Brown. I can give you the summary, I think bullets pretty much every point in the bill, but just to kind of give you an overview, and then I'm happy to take any questions that you might have. So we make two changes with regard to paid signature gatherers, so not volunteers, just paid. They have to go through a registration process, and as part of the process, we look at some of their past violations, and the policy choices in the past have been to say, you know, if you've been convicted of fraud or that kind of thing, we don't want you out being paid to gather signatures. And in looking more closely at this, we realized that in this list where we identify the most egregious types of crimes that people may have committed, we have not included what we consider our most egregious election fraud violations. So part of it just adds that in. If you've you know, paid people for their signature, if you've extorted money, if you've exerted undue influence, those types of things we've added in to prohibit you from being a paid signature gatherer. We've also, to that end, we do background checks to make sure to validate that, and the bill aligns the, so if a paid signature gatherer submits a background check, we want that background check to be good for the entire signature gathering process. So it would be for up until the deadline for turning in signatures, so they don't have to do that more than once in that period. So that's those are the main changes with signature gatherers. There's a few other I'll highlight coming from our counties. A couple sessions ago, we changed district elections from March till May, so there's a lot of deadline changes in there, and that's because there was a problem with write-in candidates and the deadlines. So if there was a write-in candidate and they got nominated or elected, they had until after an election was certified to respond as to whether they accepted that nomination or election. So we just have switched those so they have to respond before the county clerk is required to certify the election. So that's all those. There's a lot of number changes in there. Finally, we've got a couple clarifications. One I sort of affectionately call the Facebook issue, which is we have a provision in statute now that says that you cannot show your ballot to anybody else, a marked ballot. Obviously, with vote by mail, this is impossible to enforce, and there's no intent associated with it. I believe when it first came about, it was sort of like, you know, you'd show your ballot to someone else to try and influence their vote. It's not written like that, and I believe we also have other statutes to cover trying to influence people's votes in inappropriate ways. So we would like to delete that provision. And then also with regard to electioneering, this is where people can stand out there with megaphones and try and influence people's votes as they come to public buildings where ballots may be turned in. And we just want to limit that prohibition to business hours when people are actually turning in their ballots. So right now it's very broad, and so we can get complaints where people could be talking about any election. It doesn't have to be the one at hand in the middle of the night, and we find that there is no harm with that and would rather not punish people if they are would do that with absolutely no harm when there's not voters there. So those are the high level. If there are any questions as to specifics in the bill, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions? Comments? Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1504 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey moves Senate Bill 1504 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yeah.
Is there any objection? If not, motion passes. Representative Holby will carry it. Okay, open to works.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I was not attending. Was that the vote on the bill?
Yes.
I'd like to be recorded as no, please.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Kenemer to change his vote on the motion we just passed.
Thank you. I think that's the
formal Representative
way to
Barnhart moves to suspend the rules to allow Representative Kenemer to change his vote. Is there any objection? As there's no seeing none, so ordered.
Ask him how he votes.
How do you vote, Representative Kenemer?
No, please.
Representative Kenemer votes no.
Representative Kenemer votes no.
That's what I said.
Just because I was carrying it?
Yeah.
Did
you say so? I thought I heard Senator.
Yes.
He said it right.
Again, that's what happens when Representative Holby carries the bill.
Why, that's the cold truth, isn't it?
With that, I'm going to close a work session on Senate Bill 1504 and open a work session on SJR 203. Erin, can you please review the measure and the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. SJR 203 allows judges to teach Oregon Public University without violating Oregon Constitution, allows judge to be a member of Oregon National Guard without violating Oregon Constitution, retains constitutional provision that allows employee of public university or public school to be a member of a legislature. It rescinds Senate Joint Resolution 34 from 2013. There is no revenue impact on this measure. There is a fiscal statement that is issued. This measure will and currently is on the general election ballot for this fall, and we do not have any amendments for this one this morning.
Okay, are there any questions?
Yeah, Rod, yes. Does anybody want to come and explain this?
Members of the committee, this measure does come from Senator Prezonsky. I do believe you have a couple members on this committee who are also co-sponsors on this, Representative Barnhart, Representative Holby, Representative Hoyle.
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Well, just briefly, I signed on to the bill because the concept made a great deal of sense to me. The question, I have two questions really about the bill, and I think it would be useful to get answers on them. The first one is, what's the difference between this and Joint Resolution 34, which must have had an error in it in order to propose this this thing. The second question is, do we have the authority to rescind Joint Resolution 34 from 2013, given that it's gone out of our jurisdiction, I think? I'd like an answer to both of those questions before I'd be ready to proceed.
And Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I can speak to the first question regarding the error. After the measure passed last session, a legislative council issued an opinion regarding Senate Bill 207, which had to do with the employment and changing how employees were employed through the university system. And when Senate Joint Resolution was first passed, it would not enable judges to teach at public university as originally intended, because judge would not be employed by the State Board of Higher Education as a result of Senate Bill 270. That passed after this measure passed, and so this is intended to fix that issue. As to the second question, we, in terms of our authority to do so, we can get legislative counsel to come down and answer that question for you. So if we want to close this work session prior to taking action on it, we will call legislative counsel and have them come down.
That would be very helpful, Madam Chair.
I will have Senator Prezonsky come down to explain. He's on his way.
And counsel?
Counsel?
We're in caucus, Madam Chair. We need to leave.
Okay. How about I'll just hold this over till our next rules meeting?
Yes.
3 o'clock?
So that's what we're going to do.
Recess?
I'm going to close the work session on SJR 203. And
Madam Chair, with regards to the Citizens Initiative Review, you do not have to reopen that unless the committee members have specific questions. I wasn't suggesting that you prolong that hearing
Okay.
We do need to be open to take work session.
Wait, I'm going to reopen it so that we can have a work session.
Okay.
So we can vote, yeah.
And we can vote on it. I would like to reopen Senate Bill 1544, and we'll entertain a motion.
Reopen a work session, right?
Yes.
So, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1544 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey moves Senate Bill 1544 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes. Carrier, Representative Berger. All right, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1544.
Do you want to wait for Senator Pizzone?
No. Okay. The committee will be in recess until 3 o'clock.
That's it. Okay.
House Committee on Rules and open a work session on SJR 203.
Madam Chair, I move SJR 203 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey has moved SJR 203 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Representative Barnhart.
Yeah, didn't you have a question?
I'm sorry?
So,
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, I know that we received Legislative Council Committee opinion on, I think, Representative Barnhart's question.
Yes, Madam Chair. Both Representative Barnhart's questions are answered. Sub 1 on page 1 answers the question why we need to do this with regards to the fix to SJR 34. And then on page 2 at the bottom, it deals with whether the Legislative Assembly has the ability to do so.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I appreciate seeing Dexter Johnson's letter, and I think it deals with the issue I raised quite adequately.
Okay, Representative Kenemer.
And the summary of the brief summary of the article is?
Brief summary as to the why we need to do this is because SJR 34 provided for employment under the State Board of Higher Education and not under the new independent boards, governing boards for universities. So this corrects that. And Legislative Council stated that, yes, it is within the authority of the legislature to revise their own referral to the people.
Yep.
Okay, any more discussion? Is there objection? If not, the motion passes. Representative Barnhart, would you like to be the carrier?
Sure.
Okay, great. And we are adjourned.